Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This is it! The time has come!
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
The right hand puts him down!
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that!
On TalkSport.
You're listening to the Fight Night podcast on TalkSport with me, Gareth A. Davies. Joining me today for the podcast in the studio is the one and only Spencer the Omen Oliver. Well, we began by talking about the performance of Anthony Joshua against Francis Ngannou and whether Spencer is the biggest fanboy riding Joshua's back right now. No, seriously, we did have a long chat about where Joshua actually stands in the heavyweight division right now. Styles make fights, so does the transference of what he's done against Francis Ngannou fit against Tyson Fury? All that coming up now. Anthony Joshua, all week, for me, showed presence and poise and the perfect performance to put all my P's together there to really produce an outstanding performance, which has gone several different ways. Yes, he should have done it. Yes, he should have done that against Ngannou. Yes, Ngannou fell into his hands. But Joshua produced brilliance. Mm-hmm. No messing. He's done seven rounds now out in Saudi Arabia. And everybody wants to see him at the top of the heavyweight division in the biggest fights. I still count him as number three in the world. But judging on last performance, he's ready and looks fantastic under Ben Davison.
Absolutely. I think he executed a perfect game plan out there, and that was, you know, down to Ben Davison and the team. I think what Ben Davison does is he's a great student of the game. He studies the sport well, and he comes up with these good game plans. And I think
with a guy called Lee Wiley as well, by the way, he's a great strategist. Absolutely.
So, you know, the team there is brilliant, and it's been good for Anthony Joshua. I think we've always known that he's got the physicalities. He's always had the punch power. He's always been explosive. But psychologically, maybe not in the right headspace. And that's because maybe, you know, he wasn't comfortable with the trainers. He just seems to have come together for him right now with Ben Davison. And I think that we're seeing that in his performances because he's believing in himself again, Gareth. And I think that was the missing piece of the jigsaw.
Well, I think he knows
what
he is.
Self-belief.
He's as good, I will say this, I've always said this about him, he's as good a finisher as Lennox Lewis was. Mm-hmm. He's a fighter and a knockout artist. That's what he is. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever going to find perfection as a kind of nuanced boxer. He's an incredibly powerful athlete. He is getting better all the time. He's got a 90% knockout ratio, remember? So he gets rid of opponents. Tyson Fury's knockout ratio is 70-odd. Mm-hmm. So he's a boxer. And I think Joshua, as George Foreman told me years ago in an interview about Josh, about 4 years ago, he just needs to decide, AJ, what he is and just do that. Be that powerful figure. But he believes, you can see it in his strut, in his walk, when you sit down with him to interview, he's content with who he is again. And I think that's a very important thing. But when we get into the realm of you saying, and he could, there's no question that he's got the opportunity now to be the era-defining fighter. Styles make fights, and he will find it difficult against Usyk in the third fight, and I give him a better chance. We were both there in the second. But Fury is a difficult, sly and unseen fighter with different skills who's not going to expose himself to that right hand, which Francis Ngannou perhaps did foolishly early on in the fight by switching southpaw. Because clearly, Davison and Wiley had said, when he switches, throw your right.
Yep.
Because he's not going to know. He's not going to be fainting. And in a way, Ngannou played into his hands.
Absolutely. I think what we've seen from Anthony Joshua most recently, you know, when you go to the Otto Walling fight back out there in December, that was the first time where I really saw it, where you can see that he has installed that confidence and that self-belief, and he's stepping in with his shots. We didn't see that against Robert Hellenius. We didn't see that against Jermaine Franklin. You know, he was throwing his shots, but he was holding his feet. He didn't have that confidence to go and put the combinations together and then go to face too and really step it up. We got that now, and that's the best Anthony Joshua, because you're right in what you said there, Gareth, you know, about Anthony Joshua. He may not be the best technically, but what his main strengths are, that explosiveness, you know, fighting with his heart on his sleeve, rolling the dice and taking the gamble.
Absolutely.
Not being tentative. No, absolutely. Yeah. And that's back now with Anthony Joshua. And that Anthony Joshua, and that was the point I was trying to make about it, without, you know, fanboying Anthony Joshua. I said that Anthony Joshua is difficult for any heavyweight to deal with in the world, including Tyson Fury. And the reason I put Fury into the mix here now and give Anthony Joshua, where I see it as a real 50-50 fight now, is because I believe that Fury's style has changed over the years. You know, if you go back to when he boxed...
He may be heavy-legged now.
You go back to when he boxed Klitschko.
We don't know.
Do you remember when he boxed Klitschko? He danced around him and he made things and he bemused him, and he was an underdog in that fight, but he boxed unbelievably well out in Germany. Like, you know, he shocked the world. That Tyson Fury's not around anymore. You know, I compare him to, at this stage of his career, to like Floyd Mayweather.
Or Muhammad Ali.
Or Muhammad Ali later on in their career, you know, the legs don't move anymore. He's got that adaptability. He's got that boxing brain. You're right in what you say, Gareth. You know, he's not a sitting duck. He moves all the time. But the legs have slowed down. That gives Anthony Joshua, and that's why I say Anthony's got a serious shot now, because he's very explosive. He throws those shots straight through the middle, and they are, like you say, if someone gets hit by Anthony Joshua, they stay hit, they stay hurt. And that is where, and that's why now you look at, you go, rewind 12 months, you go, this is an 80-20 in favour of Tyson Fury. Now
correct.
I look at it and say it's a 50-50, because Joshua has reinstalled, and you can only go off last performances, and we know that we'll never see Fury like that again, and I expect to see a much better one, and I believe he beats Alexander Usyk if we do get that fight happening on May the 18th. I believe he wins that fight, but it's an intriguing one now, Gareth. You've got to say that Joshua's giving himself a chance.
And also, what most of us will want now is, if Fury has a significant victory over Alexander Usyk, let's say he stops him, there'll be a clamour, I believe, for Fury against Joshua next. And if the powers that be that are running the sport at the moment, if we're thinking it, they're definitely thinking it. When we think things, the promoters are definitely thinking it. And it's an enormous fight. And it's a tipping point for Saudi Arabia in what they will have achieved in four or five fights to suddenly get the biggest fight in the world out there. And it is the biggest fight. And you might get 15,000 fans travelling from the UK. And that's, I think, is part of the package of what's desired here, to create those atmospheres, to bring the British fans. If Fury loses, or if it's a tight, controversial draw against Usyk, I can see them going to a second fight, which plays into the idea that there is a chance that Joshua may be out for 9, 10, 11, 12 months. Dillian White fights tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Joe Joyce is fighting in a moment or two. In fact, he's just walking to the ring right now in Birmingham. That was a decent segue, wasn't it? And I wasn't actually looking. Fighting Cash Alley, and he's a big favourite here. We'll keep you across it. Do you think that a Dillian White is right for him, or Joe Joyce is right for him, or one of those guys is right for him in the interim? Or will they take that risk?
No, absolutely. And they will take that risk, to answer your question, because I think that the activity is key for Anthony Joshua. And I think we've seen in those performances, when you go, like, you know, Franklin and then you Hellenius, and then we go Otto Wallin, and then we see last time out against Ngannou, you see the improvements, and that's through activity. Anthony Joshua is one of those guys that likes to be active, likes to fight regularly, and he wants to do that. He wants to stay active. He wants to fight in June or July again, you know, so he will take that, you know, he will fight again whilst he's waiting for this to pan out. But you're right in what you say, Gareth. I think that is what happens. This is all dependent on what happens, Alexander Usyk versus Tyson Fury. If it's conclusive and one-sided and it goes away, I have Tyson Fury a big favourite in that, by the way, going into that fight, because I just think the physicality, the size, and his boxing brain.
And he's had the warning in the last
but he's
fight,
got a,
hasn't he?
He's got a great boxing brain, Tyson Fury, and that makes a difference. Like, when you're talking about Anthony Joshua, you look at it and you go, well, he's big, he's powerful, and look what Usyk done to him, and go, yeah, but Joshua's not the thinking fighter like Tyson Fury, you know?
Well, away from heavyweight news, Spencer and I discussed Mike Tyson against Jake Paul that's causing waves in the sport. So many differing views on whether Mike Tyson at 57 should be stepping in against a young man 30 years his junior. His health, his legacy, so many things. And is it just money making this fight happen? 28 years ago today, Mike Tyson regained the World Boxing Council heavyweight title against none other than Frank Bruno. Jake Paul wasn't even born then. And we are facing, I've seen very strong comments from you in the last week, saying that you're very unhappy about Mike Tyson stepping into the ring at the age of 57, 19 years after he retired, against
Kevin McBride.
And on a night when he said,
a sad night, by the way,
that where he said that this is it, I haven't got it anymore, I'm a ghost of myself. Is it denigrating to boxing rather than Mike Tyson or even Jake Paul that this guy, who is arguably, and well, I don't think it's even arguable, he is the most famous living boxer on the planet, maybe even the most loved.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, is it
a black eye for boxing that he's able to be drawn back into the ring? Because it's money. It's an enormous event in lots of weird ways, and we'll talk about why in a minute, but is it a black eye in boxing that Mike Tyson should not be sitting there on hundreds of millions, if not tens of millions of dollars right now?
Absolutely. I mean, look, I understand the business side of it. I understand the money that Mike Tyson will get for coming back into the ring. For all the reasons you've just highlighted there, Gareth, that he's an icon. You know, like, you know, our kids' kids will have Mike Tyson T-shirts on. Like, the name will never disappear. You know, he's one of those guys. And this is why I had such a strong opinion on it going into this fight, because we understand where Jake Paul's from and how he's gone from YouTuber to boxer. And I get the dream and I get what he's doing, and, you know, I totally understand it. But we're talking about Mike Tyson here, a guy that's 57 years of age, who, like you highlighted there, Kevin McBride in his last fight, he got stopped in, what was it, 5 or 6 rounds, and I think it was a sad sight to see. You can see he was a shell of his former self. We're talking 19 years ago. Mm. I mean, you know, you look at the Mike Tyson in 1986, knocks out Trevor Burbick to become the world's youngest ever heavyweight champion. You look at that guy and you see where he's at now. You go, I used to get up as a child. I was 11 then. Well, I got up with my dad to listen to Mike Tyson, Trevor Burbick on the radio, because he was a phenomenon, Mike Tyson. I got up, I was 11 years of age then, Gareth. I've been retired 25 years. Mike Tyson, who I was getting up to when I was a kid, is still going. And I got 57 years of age. And do you know what my worry is? That Jake Paul, you know, we know where he's at and whatever, and he's got that
strong 210-pound, 27-year-old.
He'll want to go out there and make a statement against a living legend. Mm. And my worry is, Mike Tyson, you know, his health in recent times, you know, we saw him on a Zimmer frame, you know, he was on crutches for a while. You know, his health, he's not been the greatest.
Well, he's also self-confessed taking a lot of drugs in his
absolutely.
Life.
And he's lived a bad life.
But he's in a great place right now.
Yeah.
I think what we do want to
only,
see,
only because, sorry to interrupt you, but the only reason I don't want to see it is because I was brought up with this guy, and I remember watching him, just thinking I was obsessed with him. I don't want to see Mike Tyson. God forbid Jake Paul knocks him out or something. It would be such a sad story.
I think what we all want to see in our dreams is Mike Tyson go in there, force some moves on Jake Paul and knock him out.
Absolutely.
Power, he may still have power, but he won't have reflex anymore, timing, cardio, all those things. He's going to train like a Trojan for 60, 70 days. It's the 20th of July at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium. There'll probably be 90,000 people there. It'll probably get major pay-per-view sales. They may well end up earning hundreds of millions of dollars. I think there's a, speaking to you as well, someone I love in the sport and love as a friend, and I know what happened to you with your brain hemorrhage when you had, were forced to stop boxing, that there's a physical danger to him as well,
absolutely.
To his head, where he's going to be hit by very young men.
There's an element of risk there, isn't there?
Like, the heart and his head, because of his age. I've looked into some medical reports on the fight in the last week as well. I'm very ambivalent about it, because in one weird way, that on the top line, we've got the most famous living boxer against the best marketeer in modern times in terms of influencers. And you kind of want Mike to go in there and do the fairy tale and knock out this young upstart. But it almost won't happen after 2 minutes of the fight. He's probably got 2 minutes to do that. Unless Jake Paul... I don't know. I'm uncomfortable in lots of ways. But at the same time, if you in your situation right now, if young Joe Weller, for example, or KSI said to you, yeah, we've been having this internet beef and you know you can earn 15 million from a fight.
I get
would
it.
You find it very difficult to say no?
Absolutely. And I totally get it. And that's what I said to you. I understand the business
even the
side
situation
of,
you're in.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what you can still do. I've seen your footwork.
Absolutely.
I know what you do on the pads.
Yeah, but it is one of those. I think that, you know, money can be a ruler. And, you know, when that sort of money's offered and on the table and we get it and there's a spectacle, you're going to get eyeballs on it. I understand that because Mike Tyson is that legend. You know, love it or hate it, or whether you want to see it or whether you don't want to see it, you're going to watch it. That is a fact.
We are all going to watch it.
Yeah, we're going to watch it. And I'm going to watch it. And I'm going to be watching it for the reasons you highlighted, saying, come on, Mike, you've got to do this because I don't want, you know, my childhood hero to go out like that. That's my only concern.
When Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. fought 4 years ago...
Well, that was an exhibition, wasn't it?
In an exhibition. Yeah. It was still uncomfortable to watch. I was doing a live report on it through the night, I think, for the newspaper, and it was stultifying to get through.
I thought we worked on that together.
We might have.
I think we've done it in here, I'm sure.
Were we in here? But I also remember writing it and thinking, what do I actually write here? Because it's not an edifying spectacle at all. Well, joining us then was Dillian White's trainer, Buddy McGirt, obviously famously with so many great fighters, including Arturo Gatti, Hasim Rahman and others, who Buddy has worked with, as well as being a two-weight world champion himself. And he had this to say about Dillian White facing Christian Hammer on St. Paddy's Day. Presumably against Christian Hammer tomorrow night, you want to make a statement with Dillian and get him in that super heavyweight mix in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, well, you know, I'm not looking past tomorrow. I just want to focus on that right now, to be honest. You know, we got a task we got to take care of tomorrow, and then once we take care of that, we'll be on to the next.
Well, I see that I see that Christian Hammer has weighed in. I think Dillian was about 270 or 252 and Christian Hammer was 270-odd at the weigh-ins today. Obviously, he's fought Tyson Fury. Christian Hammer now. He's fought Tyson Fury, Alexander Povetkin, Joe Joyce, many others in the heavyweight division. He's seen as a yardstick, as you rightly say. You can't look beyond him. But what would you like Dillian to do tomorrow night?
Get the victory any way possible.
Fair enough.
It's been a frustrating time for Dillian, is it? We all know the story and, the contamination of some supplements that he took. Thankfully, now he's cleared his name and he's boxing again tomorrow night. And it's a welcome to return to the heavyweight division. It really is for Dillian. And I know it's been, frustrating for him, but it must feel good for him, Buddy, to be back now, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. Definitely.
You're very talkative. You're very talkative tonight, Buddy.
No, you know what it is, man, is that I've been in like 20 different time zones in the last week or so. I was in Saudi Arabia last week.
Indeed.
I've been like everywhere, man. So I don't know whether I'm coming or going right now.
Well, it's St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, so you better get ready for some festivities in Ireland because it's going to be pretty lively.
Do you like your Guinness, Buddy?
No, you know what, man? Guinness is good, but it fills you up. Like, you drink one Guinness, it's like eating a whole meal.
Absolutely, man.
He's a very great connoisseur of wine. Mm. I tried to ply him with wine in Quebec when he was working with Callum Smith against Artur Beterbiev. Yeah. We had some amazing...
Wine is my thing.
Yeah, wine.
Yeah, wow. You've got to be careful with Gareth A. Davis, buddy, as you probably found out. This guy, he can go the full 12 rounds when it comes to drinking,
tequila.
My friend.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And if you get you on the road, forget about it.
No, but seriously, I know you can't look beyond it, but Dillian's done some great interviews in the last couple of days, actually. Did you think he was right to keep his counsel and stay quiet during this whole process? Because I think people were really pleased to find out that he was cleared, he did clear his name, and, you know, it's allowed him to come back and operate and not have to give a million explanations in lots of ways. Were you working behind the scenes that whole time?
We started working a few months ago. You know, he just told me to keep it quiet. And I said, no problem. I mean, you know, he goes, when we come back, they're going to know it. He goes, we don't want it to leak out. So that's what we did. We stayed off social media and just kept it like everything was the same.
I think that was important to do that as well, buddy, wasn't it? I think that the way that it was dealt with, you know, you look at, you know, other situations like Conor Benn, and the way that was dealt with was probably dealt in the wrong way, and it sort of blew up and it got everyone talking and it was going all over the place. But Dillian done the right thing by going quiet, going underground, getting it sorted and finding out exactly what the root of the problem was and then clearing his name. That is the way to do it. And like I say, I am pleased. You know, I go back a long way with Dillian, known him for a long time. We spent, you know, many camps together and, you know, we've watched him grow as a fighter. And it'll be great to get him back in the mix. Christian Hammer, by the way, is a tough guy, durable guy, like you say, Gareth. Been there, seen it, done it. He's been
a guardian of the heavyweight division.
Absolutely.
For all the rising guys going up to
so
world level.
Yeah. It'll be good to get a few rounds under his belt, which I'm sure, you know, Christian Hammer will do that. But ultimately, I think we see Dillian coming through this one and hopefully he gets himself right back in the mix ASAP.
Well, that's the plan, sir. To be honest, you know, we just got to keep on keeping on, as they say.
Indeed. One of the things that we were discussing right now, we've got to ask your opinion about it. You were boxing in this time, obviously. You were a world champion in two weight classes, and you grew up in the same time, and you're a very similar age to Mike Tyson. What do you think about Mike Tyson fighting Jake Paul?
Well, from what I'm hearing, they're wearing headgear and big gloves. So that's what I heard, and I don't know how true it is. And if that's the case, I don't consider that a fight. If you're wearing a headgear and big gloves, I don't consider that a fight. To me, that's more like an exhibition.
And if they're not, and if it does transpire to be a proper...
I don't see it transpiring. I don't see it happening like that. I don't personally.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I heard that as well, actually.
But do you worry about the risks to Mike at coming back at 57 to this? We've talked about it at length just now, Spencer. Like you, buddy, we are all, you know, Mike is probably the most famous living...
I personally think that Mike is just going to do this as an exhibition. Like I say, I could be wrong. That's what I'm hearing. I don't think Mike is actually going to take this as a fight. I mean, you know, it's going to sell, and their job is to sell it, you know, like him and Roy Jones did. At the end of the day, it turned out to be an exhibition.
Mm. But wouldn't we like to see him knock out the young upstart, though?
Nah, I would like to see just an exhibition.
Okay, we get you. Oh, that's very, you know, sensible. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I would just like to see an exhibition, you know, give the fans what they pay for and keep them moving.
Great stuff there from Buddy McGirt. Well, I caught up with another American legend earlier in the week, the one and only Andre, son of God, Ward. And he had this to say about fighting Joe Calzaghe, if that fight had ever materialised. And even there were plans in the works for him to fight Anthony Joshua at one point as his farewell fight in his career.
Yes, I wish I would have got it. Just a little bit ahead of my time.
You've even admitted that he's one of those guys you watch and thought, I got to be absolutely on my A game because I might have lost that on points.
Yeah, just the punch count with Joe Calzaghe. Great shape. I'm trained hard. You know, you have to account for the volume of punches that he throws and even punches that aren't landing, they may be scoring points in the eyes of the judges. So he's always looking like he's active even when he's not doing anything. And you got to be a sharpshooter, right? Like you got to, Floyd was a master at it. Bernard in his prime was a master at it, taking the punch count of a guy who likes to throw a lot of punches. And part, the majority of the way you do that is with your feet. You dictate the range. Well, you let your punches go, Joe, in this range. When you're X amount close to an opponent, I'm not going to give you that as often as you want it. And then when you're thinking and trying to get in position, I need to be hitting you, scoring points. Easier said than done. Obviously, just like I'm sure Joe feels like he would beat me, I feel like I would have found a way, no doubt about that. But a difficult, difficult fight. You know, and you saw Bernard do it in spots with Joe Calzaghe. He just didn't have the youth and the wherewithal and the extra gas in the tank to keep it up.
Two sly foxes there in lots of ways at the peak of their powers. Was it serious, the prospect of you ever fighting Anthony Joshua?
It was something that was talked about off and on as my career was winding down. But it was, if I would have continued fighting, absolutely. No doubt about it. Like, you see it. If you go watch my post-fight press conference, Kovalev 2, Verge mentioned it. And we hadn't talked about it in a while, you know, up leading up to that fight. Everything was Kovalev for the past year and a half. So he mentioned it, and there was literally nothing left for me to do at 175 pounds. Adonna Stevenson at that time, I don't believe, deserved a shot because he, you know, he did sort of what the, you know, some of those guys on that side of the fence would do. They pick and choose who they want to fight. They make good money fighting C-level, B-level, B-minus guys. And he was not eager to fight Kovalev. There's no way, me coming from a lower weight class, 168 pounds, that I should have jumped the line and been more eager to fight Sergey Kovalev than Adonis Stevenson. Then I do the heavy lifting, and Adonis is like, yeah, let's do a super fight. No, we're not going to do that. I'm going to put my business hat on. I just fought the biggest, baddest man, biggest name in the division. I'm not going backwards. So there was nothing left at 75. If I stayed around, it was going to be cruiserweight to try to target Tony Bellew. Tony was not going to turn down a fight. I know he would have took the fight. And once I felt that weight, that 200 pounds, and you know, got my feet under me, so to speak, with that fight in one training camp, we were going for Anthony Joshua. Now, if he would have took it serious, I don't know. But that's what we were gunning for.
I think you were heavy. Were you heavyweight or light heavyweight champion at the Olympics? Was it heavyweight?
Light heavy.
It was 175. It was 175, yeah.
But that's what people don't understand. I've seen casuals sort of react to that comment. And this is no disrespect to Anthony Joshua, but I just feel the way I feel about it.
Yeah.
I've never had problems with a bigger man, ever. My brother, who I talk about in the book, I believe my brother had more talent and skill and ability than me, just didn't love it like I loved it. So I put in more work and I eventually passed him up. But he was a Tommy Hearns type, very, very rangy, devastating right hand, always under his feet, ready. If you make a mistake, he's going to make you pay. And I've also been a middleweight facing heavyweights. I've been a middleweight facing light heavy. I've never had problems with taller, more physically bigger men in the boxing. In fact, I welcome that. What's more challenging is a skillful fighter, a guy who makes me think the way I make him think. A high-level chess match is more concerning to me than some guy that's got, okay, what else do you have? So if you stand in the line of Anthony Joshua's straight right hand, as a smaller man, even as a bigger man, you got problems. There's no doubt about that. There are things that I would have had to figure out, overcome. But at that stage in my career, there is no light heavyweight. I've conquered 68. I've conquered 75. I'm going to cruiserweight. If I'm successful in that fight against Tony Bellew, which I believe I am, I'm going to the mountaintop. And if we have a rematch clause, we'll do that. And then I'm done. I don't see a problem with me fighting and beating Anthony Joshua because I would have worn him down, Garrett. I'm not standing there for you to hit me with the big hand. And if you did land, I believe I would have took the right hand. But I'm not trying to be bigger than you. I'm not trying to go mass for mass. That'll never happen. You're physically bigger stature than me. But man, bro, listen, I was going to find a way. And I think it would have been a lot easier than people realized.
We're going to get back on track. What do you think of Fury and Joshua fighting in Ngannou, even though I've got my tuppence worth, he's a lot better than they're giving him credit for, Ngannou.
He's a lot better than I thought he was.
Yeah, yeah.
My opinion on them fighting them, I love it. Listen, it's too many times in the sport of boxing. Guys have been fighting tough fights and not getting compensated for far too long. If you can find a niche, these guys have fought plenty of fights, taking plenty of punches. We need another tough fight. We'll get the tough fight, but if they have an interim fight like that, something fun in the Middle East or wherever they may hold it, and they can make tens of millions, man, go get your money, have fun, enjoy it, and then get back on track after the fight. So it's just fans and media sometimes, they're never satisfied, Garrett. These guys are not robots. They are thinkers and more business savvy than they've ever been. If there's an opportunity to get a bag, if there's an opportunity to – Floyd Mayweather made his biggest payday against a non-boxer. Go figure that.
$240 million biggest payday.
Come on, man. Late in his career. Like, the career was over, and he came back to
take your fight, yeah.
Come on, brother. Like, nah, you got to get that bag. If there's a bag there, go get it, man. Go have fun. Go get that bag.
Three or four times I've written about your style as a boxer. It's very hard to describe Andre Ward's style because he tends to mirror his opponents and then pick them apart. Is that fair?
Yeah, I'm at times I'm doing that, and at other times I'm what the opponent doesn't want me to be. Oh, you want to stay outside, we're going to go inside. Oh, you're pretty good inside, so I'm going to pick my spots inside, but I'm going to make you use your feet and come to me, or I'm going to turn you. There's so much going on in my brain.
A lot that you've got kind of very light water style, you know?
I'm formless. I need to do. There's not a person on the planet that can accurately pinpoint my style. There is no name. There is no title for the style that I used.
Andre, son of God, Ward, what a great boxer. And he arguably left the sport with those two victories against Sergei Kovalev as the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the sport. Like Bruce Lee said, be like water. And Andre Ward didn't have a style. He unlocked other people's. What do you make of that, though, Spencer Oliver? Biggest fanboy in the world of Anthony Joshua. I'm just teasing you. He deserves it at the moment. He deserves a great deal of fanboying. What would have happened... We're talking 5 years ago, 6 years ago, if Anthony Joshua and Andre Ward had been in a ring together.
Well, you know what? It's a fascinating one, isn't it? Because like what you said there, you know, Andre Ward was one of those guys that comes around, you know, maybe once in a lifetime. He's got that style where you go, it was difficult to beat. He knew how to take that space away from a fighter. He knew how to take the play away from a fighter. He was thinking before they fought. What would have happened if he would have fought Anthony Joshua? Joshua was too big for him. He would have been too big. You know, I know he talks about, you know, he would have found a way. If Joshua got through, he would have taken the shot. Trust me, he wouldn't have taken the shot, because we're talking, you know, super middle, and then he went up to light heavyweight. He was talking fascinatingly about moving up to Bellew's weight, cruiserweight, taking on Bellew, and just sort of so adapting and adjusting to the weight and getting nearer to that heavyweight division. But no, he would have been too small for that. But he was a great, great fighter. One of the best. He was pound for pound the best fighter at that time. He beat a dangerous Kovalev. You know, that was a very dangerous Kovalev.
Well, he was
at
down
that
early in that
absolutely
first fight. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was at both of those. It was a great doubleheader. And he broke Kovalev really in that
he
second
did.
Fight. Yes, he went low at times in that second fight, but as we saw in the Super Sixes when he beat Karl Froch, he was prepared to be hard. He's very hard in the Kessler fight. Ward, I don't know, he just had something. It's a great book, by the way, that he's written, his autobiography. I've read the whole thing. I've got to ask you, because he spoke in glowing terms of Joe Calzaghe there, that would have been an amazing fight as well, wouldn't it? Calzaghe against Ward.
I'm glad that Andre admitted there that would have been a very difficult fight, because Calzaghe was difficult to beat. One of those southpaws that, you know, he knew his range as well, but he was all about the work rate and the combinations, punches in bunches, and, you know, where a lot of people felt he was slapping, but the power that the guy, you know, had, and that was because of the speed of hand and, you know, the speed of foot. Calzaghe was a great fighter in his day as well. That would have been a mouth-watering contest. Who do I think would have won that? I go...
Probably it's a Joe really Cal- hard yeah. pick, isn't it?
I would probably lean towards a prime Joe Calzaghe against a prime Andre Ward. I would probably say Joe Calzaghe outworks him.
They'd need two fights, wouldn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they would. But I think that Calzaghe would pip it, right? And the reason that I say that is because of the work rate.
Also this week, so much conjecture around whether Ryan Garcia should be stepping into the ring against Devin Haney in New York on April the 20th, given that there are zany things appearing from him at the moment on his social media channels. Spencer Oliver and I looked into whether we think Ryan Garcia should be stepping into the ring against Devin Haney or not. What's your take if we have a little mooch around inside the world of Ryan Garcia at the moment?
I'm concerned for Ryan Garcia, if I'm totally honest. I think that he's very erratic, his behaviour. And it's at times worryingly erratic, I think is probably a better way of putting it, Gareth. Yeah, it concerns me, if I'm totally honest, because there's something doesn't seem right there. Certainly, you know, we know that he's suffered with mental health in the past, and I don't know if that's something that's happening again, but it seems to be going that sort of way, because very, very strange, and you just, you know, worry with the fight coming up against Devin Haney, you know, talking, was it April the 20th?
It's April 20th in New York,
You go, I think the New York Athletic Commission are now looking at it, they're reviewing his case, and they should rightly be doing so as well, because I think that it is very, very strange behaviour. And I think, like you highlighted there, Gareth, I've been watching clips on Instagram, I've been watching it on Twitter as well, and yeah, something's not right with him, and we do not want to go in there. Could you imagine, God forbid, something happened in the fight with Devin Haney? You know, put boxing into disrepute if you allowed a kid to go in there and he mentally wasn't right. And he doesn't seem to be right at the moment. So I think that, you know, the New York Commission are rightly looking at it. And I hope that they make the right decision, because, I mean, what do you think on it? I mean, you've been watching it as well. I mean, what's your take on it?
As we always say, boxing's 95% mental. Mm-hmm. And this includes mental health.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I think, you know, remember, I'd never like to see it again in a ring. Remember Oliver McCall breaking down in the Lennox Lewis fight, and Mills Lane, I think it was at the time.
Yeah.
I think it was Mills Lane. I may be wrong, but saying, right, I'm not having this. You can't walk away, turn your back. I mean, I remember Lennox
Lewis
being flummoxed.
He was crying heavily, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was in the rematch, of course, and he didn't want to be there. He wasn't right. I mean, apparently he did have a drug addiction at the time. And I don't think Ryan Garcia has that. But as you rightly say, in a period away from the sport, I interviewed him just before and just after that. And he's, you know, he's got matinee idol looks, 11.5 million social media followers. Every move he makes, he's watched and viewed. He closes his Instagram down. I think he did it today, and then he's back on there. It's very bizarre, and I don't really want to see him step into the ring in what is a very, very high-profile fight against Devin Haney without some kind of person having a word with him. Obviously, he's got his parents around, but as you rightly say, the WBC at the moment are in direct talks with the New York Commission over this worrying behaviour. Several members of the boxing fraternity, by the way, I think we need to urge caution, is what my view is, including Duke McKenzie, a mental health ambassador, of course, the former three-weight world champion. He's called for the fight to be pulled, and here's what Duke has had to say.
Yeah, I think Ryan Garcia is walking a very fine line. He could go either way, to be honest with you. I think when you're a world champion, you have to carry yourself as a world champion. I don't really see that in Ryan Garcia's makeup right now. He's publicly said on record, you know, he smokes weed, he drinks alcohol and gets drunk regularly. These aren't the sort of traits you would sort of put onto a world champion or make you think that he was training or even indeed taking this fight seriously. These are the traits of somebody who's clearly on the edge. As a former boxer, we're wired a certain way. We're highly strong boxers. And it's all part of the training. It's all part of the pressure. It's all part of the, you know, the business, if you will. But I do feel that Oscar De La Hoya should take his fighter to the side and say to him, Ryan, you're not in any fit state to fight right now, because he's clearly not.
Well, the New York State Athletic Commission, as Spencer indicated just now, has the jurisdiction to cancel the fight. The WBC don't carry the same authority. They can refuse to sanction it, though, and withdraw their version of that super lightweight world title, which obviously is the main event. Earlier this evening, fascinatingly, Spencer, and I don't know what you think of this, Shakur Stevenson, which is a fight we want to see, Shakur Stevenson and Devin Haney, has declared that he's reached out to Devin Haney's father, Bill, and his trainer, Bill, he's his father and trainer, and told him he'd be willing to jump in and have the fight on April the 20th if Ryan Garcia can't. Is that the way we should go now?
Absolutely. I think that's a fascinating fight as well, and one that you just didn't see that coming. Because Shakur Stevenson, for me, has been the kid that I've said, you know, I think this guy is going to be the one. This guy is going to be the next pound-for-pound star. And we've sort of not seen that, you know, from him yet. But that would be a great fight. Him and Devin Haney is a fantastic fight. But look, going back to, you know, the Ryan Garcia situation, loved what Duke said there, actually. He was very strong and opinionated on that. You know, Duke, you know, I know that he's had his time with mental health and his brothers and whatnot as well. So he understands it. He's a great ambassador for it. And
Clinton,
he's right.
Leon, yeah, they're absolutely. All great sports people, footballers,
absolutely.
And
I think Leon's struggled with mental health, yeah, as well.
And he's very open about it, isn't he,
is,
as well, yeah.
He is. He likes talking
lovely
about
man
it.
As he is.
But I would, I would not like to see Ryan Garcia going in the ring from what we're seeing right now. I think that you know, that hopefully the New York Commission get that right. And, would I like to see Shakur? Would he be ready? If he's ready, wow, what a fight.
Punches to the head have to be taken very seriously, don't they? Smoking weed as well, obviously, as Duke just said, that can incur psychosis as well. We know the medical history of those kind of things. Boxing has a duty, doesn't it, to protect its fighters?
Absolutely.
And this is one of those situations.
Yeah, absolutely. Boxing does have a duty of care, you know, for these fighters. And I think that when we're seeing what we're seeing, you know, I think that boxing has to step up.
Or is there another argument that by allowing him to continue to fight, it gets him in a better place than if we said to him now, no, you can't fight, because that may exacerbate the situation that he's in?
I think the situation we get here, Gareth, is that that fight goes ahead. God forbid something happened to Ryan Garcia in the ring. That would put boxing into disrepute, surely. Yeah. You know, you go, this guy is not, you know, is not, yes, physically he might be there, but mentally not right. He shouldn't be stepping into a boxing ring, because that's the last place you want to be. And I get what you're saying, you know, is this keeping him sane? But it's clearly not, because we're seeing the social media posts and it's worrying, it's disturbing, and I don't want to see it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Stem.
Well, a fantastic fight is about to take place in a couple of weeks' time up in Manchester between Zelpha Barrett and Jordan Gill. Jordan Gill has been an exciting addition to British boxing over the last decade. He fights in Manchester against Barrett, and he gave us his lowdown on not only he's going to make the fight exciting, he even picks the round, wait for this, but he also talked to us about how brilliant it is to work with Ben Davison, and we discussed Anthony Joshua's performance in Saudi Arabia last week. I believe you still have the WBA International Super Featherweight title. Are you still carrying that around with you or not?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm not carrying it with me 24/7.
No, I don't. I'm
very
good.
Bringing it to the
I didn't mean it.
I thought he was going to ask me to borrow it there for a minute.
It's a great fight, you and Zelpha Barrett. We were just celebrating the great fight you had with Michael Conlan. I mean, you've been in some terrific fights, really, for 4 or 5 years now. You bring action. We don't know what drama you're going to bring with you. We were just talking about what a great matchmaking it is, you and Zelpha Barrett. I think you're headlining in Manchester. Tell us about camp, how much you're looking forward to the fight, and is it going to be another dramatic KO from you?
There's always drama with me.
There
I
is.
Always bring mm-hmm. something. Whether it's me going down or the other guy going down, there's always something to give the fans a spectacle. It's always a show with me. But no, I'm really looking forward to it. The camp's going really well. I'm working hard. I'm sparring well and doing plenty of drills to make sure that I can perform the best on the night. And that's all we can do, all we can ask from ourselves. And, you know, Zelf is a great fighter himself. He's been in some great fights. He's challenged for the world title. He's won every title I've won, you know, WBA, Commonwealth, European title. So it's a real, real good matchup. It's a real pick'em, and that's why I think so many people have split on it. I think he's favourite because he's a natural super featherweight, but he knows I'm bringing the heat.
And that's exactly what you do. You know, you've earned your stripes over the years. You know, turning pro way back when now. I can't believe it was actually 2012 when you actually turned pro. I've watched you develop as a professional and you've turned into a very good one. You've got that experience now. A real crossroads fight for both of you guys, isn't it, at this stage of your careers? You know, a must win in some ways to lead you on to bigger and better things. I mean, what is the roadmap for you? Where do you see yourself going if you come through victorious here, Jordan? I mean, where would you like to go next? Or, you know, because I suppose you just want to be in the mix of these big fights now, don't you, at this stage of your career?
Yeah, definitely. You know, neither me or Zelf, I think Zelf is older than me, but neither of us are getting any younger. We've been in the game a long time. Like you said, we've both got a lot of experience now, and we've both got ambitions of becoming world champions. So this is the fight before the world title. So whoever wins will go on and get a world title shot. And I'm pretty sure that's going to be me. So I'm just looking forward to it. I want to be in that world title mix. I feel like, you know, after the career I've had, everything I've won and what I've been through, then if I didn't fight for a world title, it'd be really disappointing for my career. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting this fight, putting on a statement and looking good, enjoying it and moving on to a world title shot. And, you know, that's what every fighter wants to do when they turn professional, become world champion. And we're one step away now.
I think you're 29, he's 30. I would say you're both absolutely in the prime of your careers mm-hmm. right now, which is why it's such a mouth-watering prospect. Now, this move to Super Feather, which I love you, and there's so many great fighters in that mix right now. And like you say, you've got an incredibly exciting style. What about people like Lee Woods? Because, you know, you and Lee Woods... Ooh, that gets my mouth watering.
A lot of people say that to me, and I'm sure it'd be an absolute spectacle. You'd pay to see the hundreds and hundreds of rounds that we've sparred together, but I don't think that fight is ever going to happen. You know,
too close.
Lee's like a brother to me. We lived together for about 7 years in Sheffield training, and we share the same gym now down in Harlow with Ben Davison. So. Yeah, I don't think that's one anyone's ever going to see. But, you know, Lee's on his own path. He's gone up to super featherweight now. And I think he's going to have one, maybe two more fights, you know, take as much money as he can out of the game, finish on a high. You know, he's been world champion. He's completed the game. So I'm absolutely buzzing for him. But for me, you know, I'm still on that journey. I still want to win that world title.
The perfect segue from you into Ben Davison there, because we've been, you know, he's been very much in the news this week, given that performance by Anthony Joshua. I mean, Ben was telling me when, I don't think you were there the day I came down just before before the visit to Saudi Arabia, and Ben was saying that he loves being in the gym with all you guys and the crazy McCormack twins and Lee's there and Chris Congo and Thomas Carty was there the other day. Obviously, he fights tomorrow night in Ireland, and that Joshua is just one of the lads in the gym there with you guys. Tell me about whether you believed Ben Davison would be really good, knowing Ben, whether you believed Ben Davison would be really good for Anthony Joshua and what you made of it out in Saudi Arabia.
I thought, first of all, I thought Anthony Joshua was fantastic. I thought he put on a tremendous show. It was clinical, and he'd done what Tyson Fury was expected to do. And in the meantime, made Tyson Fury look a little bit stupid. But, you know, I think Ben is right for any fighter that wants to learn, and he's right for any fighter that's, you know, a smart fighter. And he makes everything clear. He just gives clarity and instruction. And you know that if you follow the instructions, you know, 9 times out of 10, you're going to win. And that's all you can ask for as a fighter, you know, to trust your corner, to have clear instructions, to know what you're being asked to do isn't overcomplicated, and that it's not never going to work. So, you know, he puts a lot of time and effort into the gym. He puts a lot of time and effort into all the lads. And that's why you're seeing such good results. You know, I think he's nominated for Trainer of the Year tomorrow at the British Boxing Board Awards. So,
good for mentioning them. We're going to be there tomorrow as well. Yeah. In East London, Central London at lunchtime. Are you coming down?
I'll see you there.
Are you up for an award?
I don't think so. Not that I've been told, but I'm just going for the free food.
Well, it's good to hear a guy who's fighting in a few weeks' time saying he's going for the free food. Ben said something to me about the key about all boxers, and he said he found it with Joshua straight away. Great professional, coachability and versatility. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean by coachability? Surely everyone's coachable. And you'll know this, Jordan, from what he's saying, is that not everyone... He likes the back and forth with boxers when they don't agree, but he wants them to see the reasons why he's saying things about things, because then you evolve.
Yeah, for sure. With Ben, it's not just like mindless instructions are going, just box. You see a lot of coaches in the corner of these fights and they're just saying, come on, like trying to G their fighter up rather than actually giving them specific instructions to follow. And Ben doesn't just give you specific instructions to follow. He tells you why. He tells you when. He tells you, you know, how much to do it and the time, the right time to do it. So, yeah, I think a lot of time the fighters think, you know, they know best, especially if they come off a you know, a very good amateur career. They've won titles as pros before and then gone to someone like Ben. You know, think, yeah, I'll listen to you, but I'll do it my way. And, you know, with Ben, you can trust exactly what he's saying, because it's just so clear and the instructions are so clear and they just work so well. So I've never really come across a fighter, a trainer, especially someone so young that has such a good boxing brain. It's not just Ben, it's the whole team down there. You've got Barry Smith, that does a lot of the heavy lifting. Ben Davison, you know, is a great mind. And Lee Wiley as well, with the film study and his boxing knowledge is second to none.
He's like a savant as well with his strategy, Spence.
Yeah, but what I was going to say about Ben is...
Because you go through this as well.
Absolutely.
You coach people,
people. Yeah, but I love this because I understand it. And what I'm saying about Ben is you've got motivators and you've got teachers. Mm. And Ben's a teacher. He's a student of the game. He sits there, he studies the opponent, he looks at the footwork, he looks how they control the space, he sees if they're, you know... If they're a pugilist, if they're a boxer, or if they're a fighter, and he works out a game plan, and that's important, you know, because you get a lot of fighters these days, or a lot of trainers these days, that are motivators. They scream and they shout, but it's not constructive. And if it's not constructive, and they're not, you know, they're not using their boxing brain, then that will only get you so far. But that's what Ben is. Like, he's a tactician in many ways, but a student of the game, and that's important.
When I ran into Ben with Billy Joe Saunders in Marbella in 2016, when Tyson was like a weeble wobble, but they don't fall down. He was 28 stone at the time, incredibly huge. I do remember, like, Ben obviously boxed, and he was in the same amateur club as Billy Joe Saunders, and he knows his boxing. But he's been in the sport 8 years now. He's worked with yourself, Jordan, with Billy Joe Saunders, with Tyson Fury, with Anthony Joshua, with Devin Haney at times, with other fighters, with Lee Wood, Chris Conger, all these other guys I mentioned. So, in a way, he isn't young Ben Davison anymore, is he?
I mean, not in terms of experience, but you know, he's still a very young man. You look at a lot of the coaches that are coaches of world champions, you know, they're late 40s, 50s, because they've got that wealth of experience to pass on. But he's accumulated so much experience in such a short space of time. I think it's really commendable. But there's a big difference between a trainer and a coach. A trainer can get you fit. A trainer can, you know, give you instructions and motivate you. But a coach, he breaks everything down. With Ben, it's not one size fits all. He really, like, every fighter that he works with is very different stylistically. Even the McCormack twins. They're twins, but they fight so different, and they have such different styles.
Yeah.
And he trains everybody in a different way. And I think, you know, that shows so much versatility as a coach. And then not only does he train each fighter in a different way, but he trains them all in different ways for different fights, because you have to work to the weaknesses of your opponent. And, you know, that's what I find so mind-blowing, because I'm just like a kid in a candy shop, because every day is a school day. And when your passion is boxing, you know, you love it. You love the sport. We all love the sport. And when you're in the game, you're an active fighter. All you want to do is better yourself. And all you want to do is be the best version of yourself. And, you know, I've found the place for me that is bringing that out of me.
Well, come on then, mate. Jordan, you know I'm going to put you on the spot here. 13th of April, Manchester Arena, Zelfa Barrett.
Are we there?
How do we? I hope we're there.
Yeah, I'd love to be there.
Do you know why I say that? Because this is a great fight. It's a great fight. Anybody anybody that doesn't know that this fight's going to be good, it's great. So come on, give us a prediction, Jordan. How's this going to go?
I'll do him in the first, and I'll meet you in the bar.
Sounds good. Who's buying?
I'll buy the drink.
Well, then Joe Joyce joined us soon after his victory over Cash Alley on the Magnificent Seven card in Birmingham at the weekend. Got the rounds in the bank, got the stoppage late, feels confident again. He's back in the win column with a victory over his opponent. And he's talking about getting back in the Saudi Arabian Super League of heavyweight fights. Joe Joyce is back. Well done, Joe. Back in the win column. Feel good tonight?
Yeah, I feel good now. Yeah, good. I got a knockout. I was a bit critical of my performance, but I'm feeling happier now. I'm going to have to like watch it back and see where I can improve and stuff. But yeah, congratulations to Cash Alley and his team. It was a good fight. He was tough. He hung in there. He hit me with some overhand rights and that. And yeah, there's a lot more that can come from me for the rest of the year.
Yeah, well, that overhand right, that you'll have seen that punch you knocked Paul Butlin out with. You'll have been very aware of that punch going into the fight. But we watched it here on the monitor during the live show, and you were hunting him down all night. He was playing possum. He didn't come to trade with you, did he? And, you know, you got the rounds tonight, which I thought was good for you. And presumably, you sound good, you sound confident. Don't be too hard on yourself is what I'm saying tonight.
Yeah, I think I'll feel happier once I watch it back completely. But I did see the knockout on replay, so that was happy. I've kind of forgot about that after the fight.
Do you know what, Joe? It is important, though, for you to get those rounds under your belt. And sometimes that would be better than you going in there, blowing someone away in a round or two rounds. I think that was very, very important for you to get those rounds. And you did get the stoppage and a knockout in the end. It was a good performance from you there. I mean, where do you see yourself now, Joe? Do you want to get yourself straight back in the mix or what? I mean, what's
Saudi Arabian Super League now?
Yeah, it's a great opportunity there. And I'm really excited to get back in the mix with some of these big fights. You saw how Joseph Parker come back from a loss to me, and he beat the two biggest punchers, Wilder and Zhang. that would be a good rematch, or perhaps Dillian White, or I don't know, whoever wants it, like even Wilder maybe. I'm not sure who else is free.
But you say, sorry, Joe, you mentioned Dillian White there. He fights tomorrow night. He's free at the moment. My understanding in Spencer's is that Daniel Dubois, Deontay Wilder, obviously that fight's there for you as well, because he'll want to fight you again. Deontay Wilder, Agit Kabayel, and Filip Hrgović are tied up.
They're tied up. So that's what I mean. So, but yeah, I'm up for getting in again and being more active this year and giving some big entertaining fights.
Would you like to be on that June 1st card, Joe?
Possibly. I'm gonna have to reflect and have. But yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. There's some big opportunities. So I'm just gonna have a little rest, reflect with my team, and come again. I'm really excited to start the year off with a bang, with a good knockout. Got some rounds under my belt as well. So yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah, I think activity's key, isn't it? I mean, do you know what? I'm just sitting here now, Joe, and I'm just thinking fantasy fights that I'd like to see stylistically. You and Dillian White excites me.
Exactly.
That is a fight that I'd like to see. You know, thankfully Dillian's put all these problems behind him. He's cleared his name now, which is great news for the sport of boxing. And he goes tomorrow night. He comes through that fight, which we expect him to, against tough Christian Hammer, but we expect him to come through that one. If he does, mate, that's a fight I'd love to see stylistically, you two.
Yeah, I remember doing some sparring rounds with him years ago in Elsfield.
How did that go?
Yeah, it was good. But like, obviously, we both learned so much since then, so I'm sure it'll be a great fight. There's plenty of good fights out there for me, and I'm excited.
How's your confidence? I mean, I saw you just down by London Bridge for the press conference ahead of this Magnificent Seven card, and I mean, you're not a big guy for speaking anyway. You keep yourself to yourself. You're not a loud mouth. You're not someone that promotes fights in an.
Yeah, I'm just my authentic self. But
exactly.
I mean, I believe I'm an exciting fighter. So, and I can take a good shot. I can give a good shot, and I do my talking in the ring. I mean, I'm improving a little bit with my talking, I hope.
You're
going to get my point across.
You definitely are, mate. I tell you one thing that you definitely are. You're very infectious, and you see you, and I think you're great fun at the press conferences, and I think that, I think it works. It works really well. I think the public love that, you know.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm just my authentic self. There's no acting. There's no games. It's just me, the juggernaut, Joe Joyce. Or Joseph Joyce, if you want to.
Nice.
Is the I always throw this at you as well. Is there a chance that you might do a little bit of art between now and the next fight? Because obviously you're a fine artist, and you're a very fine artist as well as being a knockout artist. But will you do any painting?
Yeah, I'd love to. That's one of my skills. But at the end, it is work as well. So I'm obviously focused on the boxing side of things while I'm fit and still strong. And as the years progress, that's something I can all. I have got a body of work, actually, I would like to display at some point. But yeah, I've got projects in the making. So, you know, who knows? Let's see what I can come up with in the studio.
What did you make of Anthony Joshua's performance against Francis Ngannou? You've sparred both men, obviously. What did you make of the performance?
Yeah, great performance of Joshua. I think Ngannou obviously made a mistake going southpaw, and that's when he got nailed first time down the middle, and then obviously finished off. But yeah, he's styles make fights, and maybe he was a little overconfident, and I thought maybe the fight could have got longer, but Joshua just proved how, you know, he can't just come and step up from, you can't just come in from UFC and come and take on all, you know, take on the two biggest names in the sport, and obviously he had a point to prove there.
Do you say styles make fights? Do you think Spencer Oliver is fanboying too much on the back of Anthony Joshua since his victory by saying that Joshua now beats everybody in the division is going to be the era-defining fighter?
Well, we'll just have to see. Like, either way, an undisputed fight's got to happen, and then obviously the best need to fight the best, and I want to be one of the best, and I'm right there, so I'm up for all these big fights, and obviously there's some rematches that need to take place, and some fights that need to happen. But yeah, I'm coming for all of the fights. So
there you go. There you go.
Opportunity here in Saudi, and also here in UK and America. So the world's my oyster, especially as a heavyweight. I'm really excited to get in these big fights, a big fight nights.
Yeah, we want to see the juggernaut back in those big fight nights because you are entertaining, mate. We know you fight with your heart on your sleeve and you bring it. It's good, great entertainment. Just quickly, Joe, just curious, mate, to see what you think about this. Who do you think wins a fight right now between Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury if and when it happens?
Styles make fights.
Yeah, styles make fights, and that's a hotly debated subject. I mean, like early on when Joshua was coming up for the amateurs and Fury was already pro, there was sparring rumours, and apparently, you know, Joshua was like, you know, the favourite, and then
I was there, mate, for them,
and then obviously Tyson Fury had his rides to the top and stuff, and he's looked good. So it's like, you know, it's like the Mayweather and Pacquiao kind of thing. Let's hope it doesn't happen too late.
Yeah, but it's an interesting one, isn't it? It's like you say, we're all going to have an opinion, but none of us are really going to know.
Joe didn't actually tell us what he thought.
No, he didn't.
He did very, very well there.
He did. I mean, I know you've shared a ring with Joshua as an amateur.
Like, I thought with Joshua and Garner, I thought that was going to be closer, but you never know. That's what excites me about boxing, because you might have it one way, you might have your money on one person, and it goes a completely other way. So it's styles make fights, and it's a technical game. It's also, you know, the sort of mentality and tactics and skills and power, and you know, it's all bundled together that makes a fighter, and it's who's better on the night as well. So there's a lot of variables, and that's why we love it.
Finally, on this week's podcast, we were joined by the Maloney twins, Jason and Andrew, from Down Under. Spencer got a bit excited because we even planned with them maybe making the smashes, if we can call it that. Let's get Australia against the UK in a boxing event. Both men are in action soon, one in America, one in Japan. This is what they had to tell us. I'd come to Jason, first of all. What a fight. I think we spoke about it at the time, the Saul Sanchez fight. What a fight. What a recovery from you as you kind of went up and down, ascendancy, seesawing in the fight. And, you know, I mean, I got to spend that very intimate time with you after the fight. I think I travelled back to the hotel with you after the fight when you've been through a war and your family are around you, your brother's around you. Are you fully recovered? Because I know you're going to be fighting Yoshiki Takei back in Japan on May the 6th at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, mate. It was a cracking fight, and it was great to spend that special intimate time with you after the fight, mate. Obviously, I was a bit rough on the car trip back to the hotel after an all-out war. But it was a great fight to be a part of. All the fans and everyone really enjoyed the fight, which to me is very important. And we walked away with the win and the belt still around my waist. So that was a great fight and a great moment in my career. And yeah, we're back again. I'm all healed up, 100%, back training extremely hard and ready for this big opportunity to fight on a huge show in Tokyo on May the 6th and have the second defense of my world title. And put on another spectacular performance and retain the belt.
Only a twin could say we and mean we, because Andrew, I think, is on the same card as well.
No, I'm actually on a week later. I'm on.
Are you?
May 12th or May 11th in America, or I'm not sure if it's what date it is for you guys, but it's on the Kambosos Lomachenko card. I'll be the co-feature on that card, and another massive event for me to showcase my skill and make a statement and really introduce myself to a huge audience that's going to be watching.
Is that the Carlos Quadros fight? I got that wrong. Is that, yes, Carlos Quadros, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so fighting for his WBC interim world title as the co-feature to Lomachenko Kambosos. So looking forward to that one.
Spencer, I've got to let Spencer go because he's chomping at the bit here because he's from your weight division. So Spencer obviously is a super bantam, I know.
Super bantam,
but he's been chomping at the bit. Go,
yeah,
go,
now,
Spencer.
I have to because I know both of you guys have followed both of your careers. And a question I wanted to ask you both, actually, do you spar each other? You know, do you work out, like, because obviously you're boxing similar sort of times, do you help each other out and spar each other? Is that something that you don't do?
No, we do. We spar a little bit these days, mainly when we're sort of outside of camp to keep each other sharp. And then when we really start training camp, we try and bring in sparring partners that replicate our opponents a little bit better. And, you know, this fight, for example, Jason's fighting a southpaw, so we're not going to do any work during this camp. But yeah, over the years, we've done thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds and, yeah, plenty of fights outside of the ring as well. But I think that's what's helped us, all of that, is, you know, being competitive has pushed us to reach the level we're at today.
Absolutely. Do you know why I asked that question? Because my brother, who was 3 or 4 years older than me, growing up, we used to spar each other. So my dad used to sling us in the ring and we would spar each other. Because he was a little bit older than me, I always come off second best. But I think he molded me into the fighter that I become. He turned professional as well. He went over to America and boxed over there. But I think that molded me and gave me the strength. And that's why I asked you that question, because some of them sparring sessions that me and my brother used to have, especially towards the back end of the days when I used to hire him as a sparring partner and whatnot, used to be some heavy old sessions. Just wondered how yours, you know, how your, like, yours went as well.
Yeah, there's been some pay-per-view worthy rounds between us. Early days, we used to get really heated and try and kill each other and end up getting pulled apart, and we'd end up wrestling on the floor. But we've matured and now we really help each other. And there's no doubt that us having each other as twins and as training partners has helped us to get to where we are, especially in Australia. There's not a huge amount of smaller guys that we can get quality sparring from. So to have each other there every day to work together when we need it and push each other along has really, really helped us in our careers. And yeah, very grateful to have a training partner as high quality as Andrew.
We had some fantastic conversations together out in Quebec. It was a fantastic week. The snow was 10 inches deep, so we were cocooned in the hotel for most of that time. One of the things we did talk about there was you guys getting over to fight in the UK and in Saudi Arabia and coming outside Australia. Obviously, you're going to Japan and you're fighting in America under those top rank Bob Arum auspices. But can we see you? Do you have the ambition to come and fight in the UK?
Yeah, absolutely. We've talked about it for a lot of years now. Like, I would both love to fight in the UK. I see the atmosphere that you guys have at the shows over there, and I'd love to be a part of it. And there's plenty of big fights for us both in the UK, so I'm sure it'll happen at some stage. I'm looking forward to it when it does. Pull some strings, mate. It's over there.
No, what I was going to say was that at the moment, given that we've got Eddie Hearn against Frank Warren, years ago when in The Ultimate Fighter in the UFC, I came up with the idea of the Smashes, which was against... I actually came up with the name for them and they used it. The UK mixed martial artists against Australian mixed martial artists. Now, if we can get Tim Tsiu on a card, if he wins over in America, we can get two or three other Australians. We've got Eddie Hearn against Frank Warren at the moment. Why don't we do a card, The Smashes, sponsored by His Excellency Turki Alsheikh. Six Australian boxers against six British boxers. Game on.
I like it. Listen...
As you heard the
guy saying there, you know, their style is fan friendly. Oh. The British fight fans, they love that sort of style, you know. And I think that, yeah, you boys would go down a storm here. I'm sure about that.
So, can you call anyone out? Is there anyone you can call out in light bantam and bantam weight? Is there anyone out there for you at the moment or not?
Well, that's been the issue, probably, that there hasn't been, I guess, anyone at the top of our divisions yet. Andrew always wanted the fight with Kelly Yafai back in the day, but obviously he's retired now. We've got
Charlie Edwards and Sonny Edwards that we could do a little.
Oh, yes. Perfect.
Just nailed it. You just nailed it.
That's it. Edwards versus the Maloneys. I love it.
Yeah. Right,
that's there you a go. Great. That's
so
great.
There's two. We got the main and the co-main. They can argue about which is which. that for me sells it. I'd love to have you guys over here personally. You're great characters. You're absolute gentlemen. Warriors in the ring. And it is time to renew that UK Australian rivalry in fight sports.
Absolutely.
And we can do one event. We can flip a coin, who's the headline and who's the co-main, and then the next one we can do is a tag team and we'll both fight at the same time.
You've been listening to the Fight Night podcast with me, Gareth and Davis. Spencer Oliver would join me this week. Thank you to all our guests this week on a cracking show. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and listen to our midweek shows with Spencer and Simon Jordan, myself and Adi Oladipo. You've been listening to Fight Night. This is the podcast. We'll see you next time.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.